Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly today, Champions League. Citizens caned at the Etihad by Bayern, while elsewhere, Napoli, like migrant workers, get mistreated in the Emirates. We round up all the excitements across Europe, then get all breathless over the weekend ahead. In Italy, Juventus Milan and Roma Inter. In France, Marseille, Paris Saint-Germain. In Germany, Bayer against Bayern. And in England, Fulham Stoke. All that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody. Jacob Steinberg's back.
Hello, James.
You've got your teeth sorted.
Yep, all good.
Bingo. Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Nice to see you. You're doing the comedy today, Paul.
Oh, dear.
Excellent. And Amy Lawrence is back.
Hello.
Excellent. Were you at the Emirates yesterday, Amy?
I was at the Emirates the day before yesterday.
Right. I was just going to say, because if you were there yesterday, it would have... Yeah, my mistake. Yeah. What a midweek. It was a midweek of some huge highs. Extraordinary. Two standout performances, I think, in particular. Well, one and a half, because Arsenal first half against Napoli were amazing. But Bayern Munich on Wednesday night, I carumba. Question, could that Arsenal beat this Bayern? What do you think?
Listeners, I've just made a face.
Yes. That face says no, Amy.
Well, that face says, whoa, hold your horses.
Right.
That Bayern performance was just so amazingly spectacular. And it was probably everything that everybody imagined might happen when you bring together the best of Bayern with the best of Pep Guardiola.
Mm.
And there was that question, wasn't there? How do you make Bayern better from last season? And how is Guardiola going to impose a rather different flavour from what he represented at Barcelona onto the way Bayern played? And it seemed that the answer was very much all there against Manchester City.
Certainly was. Paul, you were doing minute by minute. How did you keep up?
Better than Man City.
Yeah. Ka-ching.
Yeah, Bayern were superb. And a good illustration of one of the differences between Barcelona and Bayern, because they did all the nimble passing and interplay and the pressing that Barca have always done. But they also, Barca had a certain arrogance about them where they thought that they never even had to put the ball in the air because we're so good on the ground. But Bayern could do that. And one noticeable ploy was that they targeted long diagonal balls to Clichy, who Müller routinely beat in the air. And it got, in fact, for the second goal, he didn't need to beat him in the air because Clichy just nodded off and let him go. But before that, he was winning everything in the air.
Georg Clichy could get a job on Strictly ball watching like that.
Very good. So they were superb. But as good as Bayern were, it was also a monumental failure by Man City because everyone knew that this was how Bayern were going to strive to play. And Pellegrini's tactics, the 4-4-2, which he decided would work, manifestly didn't work, and he didn't change it. He took, for an engineer, there was a really obvious structural flaw there, and it took him ages to do anything about it. And when he finally did, the game was over.
Because on Sky afterwards, Jamie Redknapp was absolutely panning Pellegrini for playing that 4-4-2 formation. I don't necessarily have a problem with it, but it's when you don't change it. But we've seen teams win the Champions League playing that kind of system, and it almost comes down to whether the players can pull it off and whether someone like Aguero can drop deep and come back into the midfield when you don't have the ball or come back to receive it, unless it becomes just two banks of four, like how we see England play.
Well, Bayern were effectively playing with just two defenders because the fullbacks were pushing so far up to overload the flanks, and then in the middle they outnumbered City in the middle, and they were squeezing the play right up high in the pitch, and City could barely get outside their own third of the park. And the one weakness that leaves in theory is that it can leave Bayern vulnerable to the break. They gambled saying, well, nobody's going to get a chance to mount a counter-attack against us. Pellegrini obviously thought he might, which is why he played with two guys up front, but he never did. It didn't work, and he didn't change until far too late.
I like this 4-1-4-1 and seeing just one sort of holding midfield player in, and even that, Philip Lahm is not really your authentic holding midfield player, but he plays it beautifully. But it was interesting to see, because obviously these days we've become quite accustomed to seeing that base of two more holding midfield players, and I think that was what Arsene Wenger got so right in the Arsenal game, and that made such a big difference to them, kind of finally catching up to the fact that, you know, if you can actually really grab hold of that space in between the back four and the midfield, that it seems to set you up so nicely. And yet, as soon as they're catching on to something like that, Bayern turn around the next day, 24 hours later, and show a completely different way of doing
things. It's an interesting point by on the Philip Lahm debate. There's an interesting point by Pete Jensen, who's Sid's mate out in Spain, isn't he? And he said Guardiola's the thing about him is he sees the player, not the position, which is why he's picked Philip Lahm, who is such a great player on the ball as well. And he said, well, in England, we have these two players at full-back, Ashley Cole and Leighton Baines. Is there any chance that that could be something that...
No, it's interesting, because Lahm isn't the only full-back in that team who could do that. Alaba, who's probably the best left-back in the world, plays that exact position for Austria and does it brilliantly. And he could do it for Bayern as well.
Wow. A couple of interesting reactions to the game last night. Not Match of the Day tweeting, Gareth Bale costs more than the whole Bayern Munich starting lineup, which I think he values at 78 or 86 million. Other than Gareth does a bit more than that, which makes you think a bit. Man City, on another day, we might have nicked it. I think everyone enjoyed that one. And lots of people commenting on Joe Hart. Julian Bennett says maybe dandruff was Joe Hart's superpower and wash and go is his kryptonite.
Yeah.
It's an interesting point, that.
Well, maybe, but we're trying to trace beforehand, me and Paul, when exactly the decline of Joe Hart started. Because I think he was quite good when they won the league. I didn't see too many problems.
Yeah. Well, he did have problems, because it's not just a bad spell he's going through. He's gone beyond that now, because he's been making mistakes for over a year and a half. You know, we found this morning, back in January 2011, Roberto Mancini rebuked him and told him that he has to improve his concentration, because he made a mistake to cost goals in a cup tie against Leicester, and he'd done several more before that. I remember him for England against Switzerland being a fall for two goals in June 2011. So it's been going on a long time, and it's clearly... I mean, the comparison now is with Fraser Foster at Celtic, who a lot of people think should get the England number one jersey now. I think Hart has a broader skill set than Fraser, insofar as he can do everything.
Right.
I think Fraser's still slightly weak on crosses, not quite as decisive. But Fraser is more reliable. He doesn't make as many mistakes as Hart. So while he can do everything, he just doesn't. He has too many lapses, which has to be a concentration thing.
Well, a lot of people questioning whether indeed for the upcoming England game against Poland, Forster should be the number one. Of course, there is the unhappy precedent of bringing in a new keeper, Scott Carson, against Croatia 2007, wasn't it, ahead of 2008, which England then failed to Wally Brolly.
Say is that Fraser Forster is, unlike Scott Carson, experienced in that kind of at that level.
Right.
Seen him play very well against Barcelona, and as he did last season, as he did on Tuesday night.
But I think what's interesting is when you take a bigger picture view of it, if you think back to probably the 2010 World Cup, and people were having debates round about then, you know, who is the great up and coming young goalkeeper in world football? Is it Neuer? Is it Joe Hart? And it was an interesting debate to be had. But you go a few years down that line, and if there's a problem for Neuer, for Germany, there's probably half a dozen goalkeepers that could come in that are experienced and of a very high calibre playing in the Bundesliga. And in the Premier League, if Joe Hart's got a problem, you're kind of looking around and you're saying, well, what other English goalkeepers have we got playing Premier League football right now? Stockdale. It's not a very long and healthy list, is it?
Well, Mancini said, David Platt said, didn't he, recently, that if him and Mancini had stayed at City this summer, they would have probably gone and bought Asmir Begovic from Stoke, which the fact they hasn't, and also had a knock-on effect on Jack Butland, who's now not playing Premier League football.
Where is he now?
Barnsley.
He's gone to Barnsley.
Wow, okay. Now, we can't move on before we get a little bit of gloating from our good friend Raphael Honigstein, who's on a train, I think, on the way back from Manchester. So we'll see how this goes. Rafa, I know you can hardly hear us, but this is your opportunity to say how great Bayern were. Go.
They were pretty good, in the words of Thomas Müller, who completely refused to get carried away, along with the rest of the Bayern players. And Pep Guardiola even said our dead ball situations were absolutely terrible. We have a lot to improve.
Right.
There was some genuine pride, though, being expressed as well by Uli Hoeneß, who said that he'd hardly seen such great performance in all of his life, and against a team of the level of Manchester City, he just thought Bayern were absolutely incredible.
Right. Iron Robin famously noting that he didn't expect it to be so easy against Man City.
Yeah, he said he expected more from them. And of course, it helped that Bayern scored the early goal that opened up the game a little bit. Also, City, I think, had simply no way to deal with Bayern's passing and pressing game. They looked like almost mesmerized and unable to weren't sure whether they should have a goal or stay back. And as a result, Bayern kind of played them off the park, you have to say.
Rafa, I hate to be so sort of jumping the gun, but I mean, is there a feeling that this Bayern team can do what hasn't been done for so long and actually retain the Champions League?
Well, I would say that people are a lot more optimistic after this game than were a few weeks ago, when it seemed that Pep's revolution might actually take away some of the brilliance. Now, the indications are that he might be able to actually improve on what seemed unimprovable. And Karl-Heinz Rummenigge at the banquet said that if you continue like that, I'm sure we might have one or two trophies on our table at the end of the season. It's hard not to feel that way because they look so superior, and also I think in comparison with one of the other teams that you probably felt were favourites this season to win the Champions League, they still look just a little bit ahead of everyone else.
All right, which banquet was this, Rafa?
This was the regular Bayern midnight get-together they put on for sponsors and the media.
Right.
At the Lowry Hotel.
Okay, and how was that?
Yeah, it was pretty low-key. The players always just turn up to grab a bite to eat and then go home. But there was a kind of a sense of everyone being very, very happy, as you'd expect. And also Philipp Lahm and Matthias Sammer, who had some differences of opinion going into this game, hugged in front of the Kalbschnitzel and Manchester Tarts. So, yeah.
Good news. Rafa, thank you very much. You get some rest on that train coming back now. Look forward to speaking to you soon.
All right, James. Take care.
Cheers, Rafa. You too. Well, there you go. Space interpreting Thomas Müller and his Bayern chums in action against Bayer on Saturday. Interesting to note that Patrick Vieira's Man City under-21 team took on Bayern this week in the kind of Junior Champions League. And you know what the score was? 6-0 to Man City. Two surprises there. A, the score, and B, I didn't know Patrick Vieira was in charge of Man City's under-21s. Good for him, Big Pat. Cool. The senior side, next up, will be over in, I think it's away to CSKA Moscow, isn't it?
Yeah.
They had a win at Viktoria Pilsen with Keisuke Honda on the score sheet. Apparently, it's now all done deal that he's going to be going to Milan in January and will inherit the number 10 shirt. All very exciting. Man City, meanwhile, this weekend, returned to the Premier League, where they still carry a bit of swagger and that. And they're taking on Everton. That's a very interesting game, isn't it? City lying seventh now on the same points as Hull. Ooh. And Everton very much in fourth place and coming off that, a similarly dominant first half against Newcastle. Foot off the gas a little bit in the second, but Monday night, first half, they were all over them. They kind of Bayern Newcastle.
Said that Newcastle were absolutely atrocious Monday night. And the defending, particularly for the third goal, where Tim Howard has ended up picking up the assist, much like Brad Guzan before him on Saturday against City. A long ball up and Colaccini lets it bounce. Yanga and Biwa is nowhere to be seen. And even then, Tim Krul doesn't come and collect it.
He comes at it and then
but a very weak effort to get it. And Lukaku, who'd already scored after about 5 minutes, heads it past him and then still has the time to embarrass Colaccini again and blast it in from a yard out.
All right. Well, Everton are a bit of a bogey side for City. They've won 6 of their last 8 meetings. They won't have Gareth Barry playing because he's on loan from City. But what do you think? Can they riff on the citizens' pain, do you think?
Everton are the form team and City have conceded, 6 goals in a few days against Aston Villa and Bayern. And there's been all sorts of various flaws coming up in those two games, not necessarily all the same ones. So yeah. I think it's a period for Pellegrini where he's probably got to a little bit go back to basics and sort of get, you know, it must seem so bizarre because after the derby, it looks like this is a team that's ready to completely...
Right, now the company was back, all their problems were over.
Yeah, so I'm not, I mean, obviously it's individual errors to an extent. You know, Hart's not having a good time as we've discussed, and Micah Richards looked a little bit loose, let's say.
But the other thing about them is that they don't have a holding midfielder, and I think Gareth Barry is probably not the greatest player in the world, but he's a very good Premier League player and is perfectly competent in that position. And so last night they had no one who could actually make a three in midfield against Bayern, and he clearly doesn't trust Javi Garcia, who, bizarre signing last summer by whoever it was, whoever's decision it was to sign him from Benfica. So, and they let De Jong go as well the season before, so they haven't replaced that.
Interesting. And of course Everton have Lukaku. Here's Wonk posting, so Everton year after year have hilariously bad starts to the season, then their manager leaves and they're off like a rocket, while Manchester United start the season stuttering like Porky Pig. I know there must be a pattern there, but I just can't put my finger on it. Which brings us indeed on to Man United, who didn't have a bad result midweek. They were away in Donetsk, a notoriously difficult place, etc., for an English club. And no Wayne Rooney, not sure how long-term that issue is, or whether they can put a funny bandage on it or whatever. But they got the 1-1 draw. Decent result?
Very. I think anybody who comes back unbeaten from Shakhtar has got to be perfectly satisfied. And I think when you look at United's group, they're pretty well positioned.
Indeed so. They're at Sunderland this weekend. Man United currently down in 12th place. They've conceded 8 goals in their last 4 Premier League appearances, but most importantly, they haven't scored from open play since the opening weekend of the season. Yikes, Paul Doyle.
Yeah, indeed. I'm not sure they'll concede this weekend, because without Stephen Fletcher, Sunderland are pretty blunt up front. I know Giaccarini scored a couple, but they've had a lot of possession in their recent matches, even against Liverpool at the weekend and at West Brom the previous week, where they lost 3-0. They had a lot of chances, but haven't been able to score.
So should be comfortable for Man United, do you think, at the Stadium of Light?
I don't think it'll be comfortable, but I'd expect United to win.
Right. Super stuff. Let's take a quick break then, and we'll be back with Arsenal. Hey, part two, and Arsenal. Cool. What performance against Napoli? And then you're overshadowed by the Bayern business on Wednesday. But A, Amy, that's 10 straight wins. And B, Napoli came into this quite fancy. I don't know, they were without one or two key players. We'll talk about that in a second. But oh my, OMG, what did Arsenal do in that first half?
Well, there was definitely a feeling around that first 15 minutes where it's been quite a while, I think, to see Arsenal start a game in that fashion, with that kind of zip and zest and the speed with which that they were playing to start with. I think Napoli sort of completely got blown away. And I don't know whether Rafa said they weren't quite prepared properly, which was a strange thing to imagine, but they just seemed to be completely overwhelmed. And I think that it was just the game where everything clicked for Arsenal. It just seemed that in a way, it was something that reminded you of the way they used to play at their pomp when Wenger had put together his winning teams in the sort of first period of his Arsenal career. It felt very much like that, and you could sense that energy in the stadium. And this run has been so encouraging for Arsenal, but I think people have always been mindful of, like, let's not get carried away, because they're very aware of the length of the season and the quality of the opposition. And it's been kind of happy coincidence in a way that they've played so well and had this run when others who you'd expect to be competing have all faltered a little bit. So I think by nature of that, they wouldn't really want to be getting too long-term view about, well, this is a team that's going to be challenging to win Premier Leagues or Champions Leagues. But a performance like that has, I think, given them a bit more conviction. And I think the players probably now believe that they can compete in a way that they haven't been able to in the last few years.
Aside from how good they were in the first half, what was almost just as impressed was the fact they made me turn over the channel at half time, because the game was over. And in previous years, well, last few seasons with Arsenal, there's always been a sense that the other side could come back and they can throw away a 4-goal lead with 20 minutes to go. But in fact, they just shut it down very well, didn't they? And
what did you turn over to, Jude?
The Barcelona game.
Oh, another game. Yeah. All right.
What you did see is two different games from Arsenal within that 90 minutes. Because in the first half, they showed that they could sort of kill you with style. And in the second half, they killed Napoli with with just kind of the quality of being able to resist. And Napoli pressed quite hard in that second half, and although they lacked quality and they were just increasingly just taking pot shots from distance, they stopped Arsenal from playing in the same way. But Arsenal still seemed able to really have control and not feel under pressure. So the way they kind of strangled the game in the second half in a very different way, in a more mature way, was, I think, encouraging to show that if they do go further in the competition, they have that in their armoury as well.
James Horncastle pointing out, it's a decade now since an Italian team so much as scored away to Arsenal. That's remarkable, isn't it? There's been so many teams that have turned up and got absolutely bottoms handed to them. I remember famously Juve coming back with Patrick Vieira and young Fabregas schooling the old pro. Napoli, one or two, I mean, points to make about them. One, I think the euphoria over Dortmund masked some things that really are weak at the back, and they lost one of their better defenders to Inter over the summer. And then having Higuain out made a big difference, because Pandev is much more workmanlike. But also Maggio, who's such a crucial player for them, his dynamism on the right. And it meant a lot of pressure on Insigne, who had a great debut in the Champions League. But this is a young man only on his second appearance, and he, like the rest of the team, completely overwhelmed. But you know, that said, they were utterly outclassed. And the Italian papers were saying, yeah, Arsenal on another level. It'll be interesting when the return match to San Paolo. But,
absolutely, and that's the last game of the group. And bear in mind, Arsenal now play Dortmund on a home and away basis. So I think there's still potential for a lot of change in this group. 6 points is an amazing start.
Yeah, Arsenal this weekend looking to make it 11 out of 11 in all competitions. They're going to be at the Hawthorns against, crikey, in form West Brom. Should be interesting, no?
Yeah, I thought West Brom were fabulous last weekend at Old Trafford. And what I liked most about that performance was that when you watched it, you sort of sometimes expect with games when a big club gets beaten at home that perhaps the plucky other team get a bit lucky and have a couple of counter-attacks. But it wasn't like that at all. I think West Brom was so dominant. Mm. You know, they've got good confidence, and I think they'll have a right good go at Arsenal.
Is that the game of the weekend, do you think? West Brom, Arsenal? It's not too much competition for that title this weekend, but we'll look at some of the other matches. There is Stoke Fulham, yeah, that's true.
It's impressive, actually, the way that Steve Clarke is trying to evolve West Brom this year, because last year when they did so well, they were pretty boring to watch, especially when they went away to bigger teams. But he's brought in higher quality attacking players and is deliberately trying to play a more enterprising game, and it's starting to pay off.
Mm. Well, certainly looking forward to that one. Now, the one Premier League side we haven't mentioned in Europe was Chelsea, who went to Steaua Bucharest, and some suggestions they were going to struggle there. Not at all.
Very, very good own goal. Yeah. The second Chelsea goal where, I think it was Eto'o, wasn't it, who had the shot, and the guy who was already fairly hapless at right back came charging in and managed to take the ball into the net along with his momentum and fall into the back of the net, get himself in a bit of a tangle. It was all a bit embarrassing for Steaua. But what Mata played, I think he apparently played well. Sherlock on the left was good. But the thing that Jose thinks said was that Mata was good without the ball.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Making tea, so that kind of thing, or what?
I think he's winning him over.
Right.
He's got a good attitude.
He's got a good attitude, hasn't he?
He hasn't moaned or sulked while he's been out of the side, one matter.
Right.
He's just worked his way back in, and they're a much better side when he's in there.
Right. Okay, well, they're going to be... they're at Norwich. At the wrong end of the M, whatever it is.
I think.
Hmm?
You need some A's.
A11. The wrong end of the A11, then. Okay. And, what do you think about that? Norwich's chances of upsetting? No?
Norwich are struggling a bit for goals, aren't they? And Chelsea obviously are going to be without Torres, it seems, who's now injured.
Yeah, get banned. Mm. But yes, without Torres for 3 weeks, apparently. And Eto'o and Barber. Eto'o looked a bit better, did he not, in this game away to Steaua?
A bit, but I still think he probably is going to need another month or so to play himself back into sort of his real sharpness.
Right, okay.
Denver Barr's a good striker as well. He kind of gets forgotten. He's good in the Premier League.
All right. Now, very shortly, we'll be off to Madrid for the magic that is Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, it is Sid Lowe in Spain. That's a relief. Hi, Sid, how are you?
All right, thanks. How are you?
Great. Looking forward to your book tour next week, I think. Is that right? Or the week after?
No, the week after.
Right. In the meantime, other people...
In the meantime, International Week, Jimbo.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Well, that'll be exciting. And in
the
meantime...
Gareth Bale's been called up, which will be funny.
Gareth Bale?
Has been called up.
Has he?
Well, he's been called up to the Wales squad, despite Ancelotti saying last night, one of the good things about this is we've got time, we've got 15 days to get him fit. Presumably
right.
Ancelotti making the assumption that there was no way he could go with the Wales squad, but Wales have called him up.
Right. The new Jonathan Woodgate, we're calling him.
Well, I very much hope it doesn't turn out like it did for Jonathan Woodgate.
Mm.
It's early, isn't it? I think this is really just a product of having a pretty poor pre-season and stuff like that, rather than chronic series of issues which Woodgate had, which I think in the end they decided that there was a whole series of factors which were contributing to Woodgate's problems, back and hip problems, which then, of course, you know, I mean, obviously I'm not a doctor, at least not that kind of doctor, to be able to understand it, but that contributed to the constant muscular injuries everywhere else.
He then tore that
tendon through the middle of his thigh, Woodgate, which was really pretty serious injury.
Mm, all right. Anyway, Real Madrid without Gareth Bale, with another big win, that's now 10 goals in the last two Champions League appearances, but they were getting whistled by the crowd, were they not?
Very early on, there was some frustration. There was a little bit of whistling when they first came out, because, of course, it comes off the back of the Atletico Madrid defeat. It comes off the back of although they won in Elche, they were really quite poor, so yeah. There was a certain degree of frustration. A lot of changes in the team last night, not just in the players, but in the structure of the side. And it took a while for them to find a way through. Sol Bakken was saying off again, the Copenhagen coach, that he felt like his team had played really well until about the 60th minute. I think Madrid's second came in 66, 67, something like that. And then eventually they got four. But the star man was Angel Di Maria, who, of course, was a person who was playing in place of Gareth Bale.
Right, interesting. And that wonderful Rabona assist to...
Yeah, I'm glad you said the Rabona, because I asked this last night. I don't know what they call it in England, because obviously in Spain it's a Rabona. And everyone said, well, in England, I got some quite nice responses. In England, a lot of people saying it's also called a Rabona, because there simply isn't another English word for it. Others saying it's not called anything in England, because no one would do that. Others people saying it's called a can't bloody use my right foot to save my life. And others saying it's called an instant injury. And right. I think quite a lot of people saying it was called a David Dunn.
Really? Hmm, okay.
Yeah, because I believe he tried to do it and fell on his arse and looked very silly.
Hooray! Okay. Now, you mentioned the fact that Real were coming off that derby defeat to Atletico Madrid, who only went and continued their incredible run of form. Were they away at Porto?
Yes, they were, yeah.
Oh, that's a good result.
They played there four times and not won before, so it was a great result.
Hey, they're for real, aren't they, Atleti?
I think they are. I mean, I think their problem, I mean, I say this and it sounds contradictory, because they needed to chase the game the other night and they succeeded in doing it. I think their problem will come against teams that are relatively defensive against them, because they're not naturally a very expansive team in terms of picking people off. They play much better on their break. They're very, 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 very strong defensively. But I think they are evolving into something with a little bit more variety this year. And I think they're a genuinely good side. And also, because for me, the query was, would they get out of the group? With two wins out of two, they probably will now. And when it comes to head-to-head games, they're going to be clever enough that they could go a reasonably long way, depending, of course, on how kind of the draw treats them. But they're a properly good side. And they were without Diego Costa this week as well, and still turn it around. And the winning goal is a brilliant free kick.
Mm.
Sid? Simeone seemed to go completely berserk when he saw that free kick at the end.
Like, yeah, it's brilliant. Simeone's reaction, running across and jumping into the arms of Manuel Burgos, who fortunately is a goalkeeper, so didn't drop him.
Yeah, nicely done. Right, and the other...
Oh, of course, if he'd been an English goalkeeper, he probably would have done.
Right, yeah. What about Barcelona then, Sid, in their late win at Celtic? 909 passes, 79% possession.
Bonkers, really. I mean, it was pretty much as they anticipated. They anticipated Celtic waiting for them, being very deep, very defensive, that it would take a long time to get the first goal, and that after that, chances would come. And admittedly, they didn't take any other chances after that, but chances did come after that. Of course, assisted by the red card, I think that made things a little bit easier, although part of the argument here has been that in some ways it made it harder yet, because it just reinforced the idea of Celtic that, right, we absolutely must be defensive, we absolutely must try and close them off. And for any team, however good you are, cutting through that's going to be difficult. Barcelona, of course, without Messi, although I actually thought that playing up front, Neymar was really quite good.
Mm, interesting. What they got this weekend, what's the big game in the Liga this weekend?
Well, I think there's some quite interesting ones, but it's not really Barcelona or Real Madrid's game. It's Barcelona play at home against Valladolid.
So what's the interesting one then?
Well, you've got Athletic Bilbao against Valencia, which is quite a nice game. And from my point of view, purely selfish, Jimbo, but from my point of view, three games in Madrid this weekend. Unfortunately, they've managed to get the timetabling just right, so I'll actually be able to go to all three of them.
Wow, you lucky.
Including watching Real Sociedad, so to try and get a glimpse of United's next opponents.
Right, very good. All right, Sid. Well, listen, enjoy that. We'll speak to you next week.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Ciao. Right. Other Champions League points of interest, Mitroglou with a hat-trick for Olympiacos away at Anderlecht. That was good.
It was a good goal, his hat-trick goal.
Yeah. Also, somebody was pointing out there's been some great consolation goals this week. For example, Kabay's goal for Newcastle. And there are one or two examples of this in the Champions League as well. Hey, here's Lequipe going very excitedly big on Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the cover of this morning's L'Équipe Paris Saint-Germain, with a 3-0 win against Benfica. And, it's quite an extraordinary legs-wide-apart crotch shot of Ibra there. What's the headline say, Paul?
Zlatan ne plaisant plus. Oh, right. No, ne plaisant pas.
Ne plaisant pas. What does that mean then?
Zlatan isn't kidding.
He's not kidding anymore. Yeah. No more Mr. Nice Guy Europe. Have some of that. Rather less exciting was Milan's 1-1 draw away to Ajax. Terrific bit of penalty winning from Balotelli. Not sure if you saw this. Pepe had done this, I think, was it the week before that he grabbed the defender's arm and then fell backwards as though pushed? And Balotelli did more or less the same thing and managed to get a penalty from it, which is just as well because Milan were losing away to Ajax. And
very late on as well, so yeah. It's really harsh for Ajax, who, if they'd have got...
It was a 92nd minute, the penalty. I think they'd taken the lead, Ajax, in the 90th or something.
Yeah, but it just goes to show, because I think they would have been tied on 3 points each, but for this decision, which now leaves Ajax just trailing with a point and Milan on 4, and in such a difficult group where I think you assume that we know who's going to go through first. Mm. So the other three teams all have a decent chance, in theory, I think, of taking the runners-up spot. But
well, Europe's hoping Milan are going to go through with a no shots attempted in the first half and possession of 26.7%.
Just on the subject of PSG there, because their performance has been hailed as the best ever since the Qataris took over. And they achieved a real level of fluidity. And they because you mentioned the amount of passes that Barcelona had against Celtic, PSG had something like 880 completed passes last night, which no team other than Barcelona has managed to do in the Champions League in the last decade.
Wow.
Often last season after Champions League matches, they sort of experienced a come down in their next league game. But of course, this weekend they're at Marseille, so they're unlikely to
suffer classique.
From a lack of motivation there.
Right, well, that's going to be a huge game, isn't it? Marseille got beaten there by Monaco and then had a bit of a rubbish run of results, but they've bounced back a little bit of late.
Yeah, you have to make PSG favourites simply because they're a better team. And Marseille, who have made a lot of progress this year and are a good team, but they just lack a cutting edge because Gignac isn't a top-level striker.
There you go. Right, now Milan have got a huge match themselves this weekend. They're taking on Juventus in what used to be an absolute whopping game, but Milan, the way they are at the moment. Mind you, Juventus themselves once again had a draw. Extraordinary game, this. Bizarrely, I actually was watching the second half of this rather than the various other delights that were on show on Wednesday. And it was a bit like the Copenhagen game for Juve because they were all over the match. They got caught out early on basically, Galatasaray had two goals. Well, let's go back to the start. Basically, Galatasaray appointed Roberto Mancini, which is very interesting because A, he's a bit of a enemy figure for Juventus, and B, he's got a rubbish record in the Champions League, but they bring him in, he's got 2 days to prepare it, he drops Burak Yilmaz and goes with Didier Drogba alone up front, and it pays off brilliantly because early on Drogba catches out Bonucci on a stray back pass and pounces and puts Galatasaray in the lead. Juve are kind of throwing everything at the Turks, but their finishing is terrible, and the final passes is really, really disappointing. It was like they had collectively all had just an off day, And then there were one or two key injuries. Vucinic went off. And I think really key was the fact that Lichtsteiner went off and they brought on Isla. And Lichtsteiner, while not be the most spectacular player in the world, he knows what he does and he's good at doing it. Whereas a lot of the Juve players think they can do things, you know, score worldies from 40 yards every time they get the ball. And, you know, normally they're a bit more disciplined than that. Anyway, so eventually they get a penalty and then they put that away and then they take the lead. And it's about 4 minutes to go and you think, brilliant. But from kickoff, ball hoofed downfield. And Drogba again leaps above Giorgio Chiellini, knocks the ball down, and one of his teammates sticks in the back of the net, and that's your 2-2. And crikey. So Juve are in a bit of trouble now. They've only got 2 points from the first two games.
I'm still a bit bewildered by this Galatasaray-Mancini thing. Mm. Mostly because Fatih Terim, who you talk about Mancini not having the best Champions League record, Fatih Terim has got an unbelievable record in Europe for a Turkish manager. But apparently they decided to sack Terim just because they offered him a new contract and he didn't say yes, so bang, there he is gone.
Well, there have been various issues. A, they got hammered at home 6-0 by Real Madrid in the previous round. B, he'd got a lengthy ban for an attacking official. They weren't very happy with his behaviour. C, the club owner was extremely upset that Terim wasn't answering his phone calls or texts. And, you know, and D, I think D's next, D, he, against their wishes, at the start of this season or over the summer, decided to take on the job also managing the Turkish national side at the same time. And Galatasaray's results since haven't been desperately good and they dropped to third and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that was kind of the thinking behind all of that. But Mancini, what a brilliant start for him. I didn't get the win, but yeah, great result.
I went to see Terim once when he was Galatasaray manager the first time.
Right.
And I just remember, I mean, he is a guy who does sort of quite like himself, I'll give you that. And he had his own personal range of embossed tracksuits with his name on it in autograph style.
Well, that's much nicer than those horrible initial ones. I think I've said before that one of the things that I really...
It was a whole leisure wear.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yes, a leisure wear? Oh, that's good.
A leisure wear thing that was
I don't like team tracksuits with the initials on. It just reminds me of school. Like, why do you need, didn't it, like the little name tags in the back? Like, why do you need... Good. Oh, a couple of quick posts before we have another bit of music, and then we'll wrap up the Premier League weekend. Lots of people posting in with, you know, this notion that there are loads of James... There are hundreds of James Richardsons. I've got Gavin Peacock...
Luther Blissett.
Yeah, very much so. Gavin Peacock, The Hook, Carl Pilkington. Fred Easy suggests Ming the Merciless, late career Agassi... Inspector Montalbano, another one. Of course, we're all forgetting the one in Tel Aviv, the duty free there, which is very much James Richardson as well. In Crises, thanks for not suggesting your own. No Jimmy Somerville's there. In Crisis says, never mind the Champions League. This week I'll be looking forward to Steve McLaren's first TV interview as Rams manager. Will he attempt a Derby accent? Well, it was an interesting debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were 4-1 down at home to Ipswich.
Mm.
Or, were they at home or was.
They were 2-0 down inside the first 9 minutes, and
yeah,
they went
to 4-1 down at half time. But he wasn't actually managing; he was just watching.
Oh, was he?
He did go in at
half time.
And then they roared back
4-0.
Yeah. Right, okay. Well, good for him. Stoppinger posts in with a correct pronunciation of Mkhitaryan, which, well, that's my version of it, but that's more or less what it should be. As somebody else suggested, it's a bit like somebody with a Scouse accent saying Mkhitaryan. So it's like Mkhitaryan. Yeah, apparently that's right. So now you know. And there's producer Ben points. It's a shame he didn't join Liverpool because, you know, he would have felt right at home there. And, oh, speaking of Liverpool, Hague in 88, Luis Suarez and Daniel Sturridge liberate confectionaries from infants against Sunderland. And the proposition that they're now some classic partnership in the making just waved on through. Some mistake, surely, says Hague in 88. Well, perhaps this weekend will provide a tougher test for the Liverpool front pair. They're facing Crystal Palace. All right, well, we'll look at that game and more after this. Right, Liverpool, Crystal Palace and the rest of the Premier League. Liverpool have only lost once to Palace in the Premier League and they usually hammer them. Palace have lost 5 out of 6 games and we're expecting this to be, what, 6 out of 7? Yeah, at Anfield, nods all round. Let's move on to Alan Pardew under pressure as Newcastle travel to Cardiff. Jacob.
Yeah, well, they were appalling on Monday night in the first half.
Even though they came back in the second half?
Well, they came back in the second half. Everton did take their foot off the gas a little bit, and Newcastle did come back with... It was interesting that Hatem Ben Arfa was taken off at half-time when he is pretty much their best player, and on came Johan Kabay, who wasn't fit to start, and then scored a very good goal, and kind of the game drifted until Lurk Remy scored with about a minute to go. and suddenly there was just this panic at the end from Everton. But with Pardew, he keeps saying what a brilliant squad he's got, and so you wonder, you know, what exactly is the problem then, Alan?
Well, Newcastle's problem is a little bit like Fulham's at times. One of the reasons he took off Ben Arfa against Everton was because he wasn't doing enough without the ball. And Fulham have that problem. And Cardiff are perfectly designed to exploit that because they're a really dynamic and coherent team. They played Fulham last week and totally outclassed them. Their midfield, especially Medel, superb player. So if Newcastle are below par, they'll get beaten.
Gary Medel is known as a kind of pit bull, you know, roughhouse fella in midfield, but he actually completed 99% of his passes last weekend.
Yeah.
And they were quite. It's not like he did one pass and he completed it, which actually would struggle to make that 99%. I think he had something like 97 or 87 passes, and 86 of them found target. That's pretty good. I'm not sure if they were all in the wrong direction, but.
Yeah, and in fact, all their new players, all their new signings were really good. Odin Wingi was his first start, and he looked really good.
Did he? Yeah.
The Teofield, their right back, looked excellent. And by contrast, Fulham's players, I know we're coming on to Fulham in a minute.
Well, were you at Fulham right last weekend, Paul?
I was, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And the mood is getting dark at Craven Cottage.
It is, yeah. I mean, Yoel is hanging by a thread. Basically, Shahid Khan, the owner, is coming to London in a couple of weeks with his NFL franchise. They're playing at Wembley at the international break. I think Fulham have three matches before then. They have tomorrow's game against Stoke, and they have Palace and Southampton. So opportunities there perhaps to pick up 9 points, and you'd suggest that he needs a good haul of points to avoid the chop, if he even makes it that far. But he's as he pointed out, I mean, he knows himself after the game last week, he knows himself that his job is on the line. And but he was sort of defending himself and pointing out how little money he has had to spend over the last 2 years, and they have had very little to spend, and he's chosen to spend it in a sort of high risk way, insofar as he's gone for players with good pedigree, but who arrive with various problems, either fitness or out of favour or haven't played for a while, like Darren Bent and whatever like that, and he's trying to mould them into a team really quickly, and so far it hasn't worked, because in addition to some of them being inconsistent almost by nature, like Tarapt and Brian Ruiz, who's been there for it longer, Berbatov and people like that, they all have fitness problems as well at the moment. I mean Bent last week, he didn't touch the ball hardly. Berbatov was in one of his off days, and when you're...
He's having a lot of those, though.
He's having a lot of, yeah, an increasing number, and they're carrying too many players, and they have one of the criticisms Fulham fans have is that he's put too much faith in these older guys, and because they say they have a lot of very talented youngsters. You mentioned Man City's team hammering Bayern Munich, their under 21 team. Fulham's youth teams are actually champions of the Premier League, I think.
Really?
Are the under 18 team? Maybe it's not the under 21s, but they have a lot of people like De Jaga, who hasn't been getting much action. Kaçanaklić and Kasami have been integrated into the team this year and done quite well, but there's just not enough. And so it has to come together. Yol's plan has to come together quickly, or somebody else would be given a chance to implement the plan, you imagine.
Right, well, they're taking on Stoke, which means
Mark
a return to...
Old,
right, he left because they didn't match his ambition. And
Well,
Stoke too.
Yeah, although he's arrived there at a time when they're not spending so much money anymore.
Yeah,
he's got
funny.
Nowhere near as much spending power as Pulis had so far, anyway.
Well, what do you think of Yol's chances of turning it around then against the Potters?
Well, it's really hard to predict simply because there's so many unpredictable players in that team,
right,
who, as I said, aren't even at full fitness. So we all know that if they click, all those players can blow away most teams, but you wouldn't like to be relying on them for your job. Because one rather alarming thing, and you'd imagine that Stoke, even though Mark Hughes has changed their style, will try to exploit this, is Fulham have been absolutely abysmal at defending set pieces this season. I don't know, Hangeland seems to have forgotten how to jump.
Wow.
And, and so you'd imagine Stoke will certainly try to exploit that.
Wow. Hey. Mm. Amy, are you excited about Saints against Swansea?
Not as excited as our Southampton correspondent over there, Jacob.
Oh, crap, yeah, Jacob,
no, I have got something to say.
All right, go on.
What are you going to say?
Every week you're down at Saints, which is a shame because they're not playing there every week. But anyway, Amy.
Well, just I think it's interesting what you're saying about having a new manager having to try and implement a new team quickly, because in a way, Pochettino seems to have done that, although it's not been with necessarily a lot of new players, but a new way of playing, and Southampton seem to be reaping the rewards for what was a brave decision in bringing him in, and having had the summer to sort of develop Southampton, they're in really, really good shape, and two really good footballing teams to watch. So I think it'll be a nice open game, and I wouldn't wish to predict who on earth is going to come top of that.
Well, the interesting about Southampton is they had a reputation for being very gung-ho and playing great football under Adkins, and since Pochettino's come in, when they play against teams who sit back, they struggle. And the teams they've done really well against have been the likes of Chelsea, Liverpool, City, when they've been given a bit more space to play into. And at half-time against Palace on Saturday, a lot of us were standing around and saying, this feels a bit like the West Ham game it was 0-0 at half-time, and when they were struggling it was a bit too slow around the area, a bit ponderous, the one-touch passes weren't coming off, all these 1-2s, lack of width. And then suddenly Osvaldo comes up with a little shimmy on the edge of the area and manages to blast one in right after half time. They score again through Lambert, and suddenly everything's fine. So I still think there are things for them to work on. I don't know if he knows his best team going forward at the moment, but in terms of defence, they're really hard just to create chances against. And since he's come in, they've conceded 21 goals in 22 league matches, which is incredible. And they're, along with Spurs, the best defence in the league, letting 2 goals. This time last season, they'd let in 18 goals in 6 matches, which is slightly skewed by the fact they played Arsenal, United and City, but you wouldn't expect them to have that record once they play those teams this season round.
All right, you mentioned Spurs. They're taking on your West Ham boys. And West Ham are obviously looking for some points.
And some goals.
Yeah.
No, at the moment, they're basically playing with 10 players because Maiga is just... he's not suited to playing as in the Sam Allardyce system of one up front, and it also means that Kevin Nolan is his best asset is negated by the fact that he wants someone to knock the ball down from in the box, and he doesn't have his mate there, Andy Carroll, who's still out. Petrich hasn't yet started a game.
Cole has now been told he can come back.
He's almost back. It's a weird situation with him where he's training with them, but he's not quite fit yet. I don't know what he was doing in the summer.
Right.
But he hasn't got his contract yet.
Oh dear. But Spurs will be perhaps a little bit tired. They've got to travel over to Angie Makashkala.
Yeah, they're playing them tonight. So, yeah, but West Ham have generally been abysmal in that game in the last. They haven't won there since 1999.
All right.
So I would expect a comfortable Tottenham victory.
Oh, all right. Well, the last Premier League game is Hull against Aston Villa. No to Hull Tigers, tweeting. The No to Hull Tigers campaign would welcome a name check for our website on Thursday's pod, which is www.citytillwedie.com. It's quite a niche website, that, isn't it? 3 wins already for Hull. They're up in 8th. Yeah, same points as Man City, as we mentioned before. And Aston Villa, Benteke's still out. Of course, they're on a bit of a high after their victory against Man City. And Robbie Brady's out for Hull. Anything you want to add to that?
Just a bit of Andy Vyman love, maybe.
Yeah,
I really like Vyman as a player. He's got such kind of effervescence. I like his attitude, the way he plays. I think he brings something really good to that Villa team.
Beard.
That too.
Yeah, you want a footballer with a beard in your side.
Well, you would say that, Jimbo.
And that victory. Certainly gives him a Vyman's lift.
You want a beard? Did you see Nicholas Bentner's beard?
Yes.
Talking of people who are making comebacks to...
Do you know why? Do you know what number did Nicholas Bentner used to have at Arsenal?
52.
52. And why did he have 52 on the back of his shirt?
Well, the alleged story is because that was the size of his wage packet in thousands of pounds.
Yep.
I wouldn't know whether that's true or not, but right. That's just what people say. And now it's 23, so you can read into that what you like. Because he changed squad number. But right. He's back in the Denmark team. Back in the squad, I should say.
Well, as people always point out, he's got a good record for his squad.
He has, yeah. I think they're quite excited about that in Denmark. They're sensing a rebirth.
Ooh. Crikey. Well, all that international type stuff will be coming up in our next show and the one after that, because it'll be International Week next week, and a particularly important International Week as well. Some crucial games. Crucial. Anyway, that's very much it, though, in the meantime, for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many, many thanks for joining Jacob Steinberg, Paul Doyle and Amy Lawrence and producer Ben, and you, listener, you as well. We'll be back on Monday. Look out for a little bit of a paper review, if you like, on Friday. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.